Wisconsin Summit Grove, was that a name that you guys came up with, or was it called Summit Grove previously? Or?
Actually, my husband and his brother started it, they were going to name it Summit Grove, but they applied for, I don't know, I don't think they were incorporated, but apparently, going into business, you had to apply for the name, and there were too many Summit Groves in the country, so they made it Thompson's Summit Grove.
Oh, so it was a business name that they...
Yeah.
And so, your husband's name again?
Wayne, W-A-Y-N-E,
that's right.
Wayne Franklin.
Yeah.
Thompson, T-H-O-M-P-S-O-N.
And how did you meet him?
I was in the Navy and stationed down at the foot of Broadway District Building. And all my life I had seen newsreels about the 200-inch telescope, and I couldn't be this close and not see it, you know. So I lived in Coronado at the time, bought a 3-speed bike, and came up here. Started up here.
You mean you pedaled up here?
Well,
you had to catch a ride.
I got a ride with a traveling salesman out on Kearney Mesa. And see, it wasn't the 80 miles. It was the mile up that would have thrown me.
Right.
So, anyway, he had never seen this part of the country. So he drove me clear up to Wayne's gas station, there, the Union Oil Station. And then he drove down the mountain and took my bike out of the back end of his station wagon and drove down off the mountain. And I started up toward the observatory and couldn't. I'd go a few, you know, and I was just all but turning blue.
Oh, yeah.
And I had had pneumonia about 6 months before, and I thought, gee, I thought I had recovered from pneumonia, but it was the altitude, which hadn't occurred to me, you know. So anyway, I went back to the snack bar and asked Wayne if there was a motel around, and or where was the nearest motel, expecting, you know, around the corner, down at the foot of the mountain. But they sometimes rent out the spare room. Would I be interested? Well, you know, it was my only possibility, aside from sleeping under a tree. So I said, well, yeah, I'll take it. And he says, well, I haven't cleaned it up from last night yet, so I can't show it to you, but I'll get it ready by the time you come back. So anyway, I walked most of the way to the observatory, and when I came back, had supper and a hamburger, and stayed there at the house. And he slept out on the couch. This was his room, ordinarily. I didn't know that.
Oh, my God.
So, you know, I didn't know what the house was like. But anyway, that was it. And he showed me around the mountain. Oh, we went over to use the phone at the state park. So while we were out doing that, he showed me around the mountain a little. And that was it.
Wow.
Next day, I started back to town.
And he called you up, and
yeah,
you guys kept in touch. Yeah.
Right. I thought I was going to have 5 days off. We had worked double shifts. I was in the repair shop of the communications station down there. And one of the boys was on leave, and the other one's mother got sick or died, I don't know, I don't remember. So he was gone on emergency leave. That left two of us waves. So we stood double watches, an eve watch, and then a sleeping mid-watch. And the chief said, oh, you know, I'll get you a week off after this. Well, he couldn't.
Mm-hmm.
It would come off our leave time. All he could do was give us 72 hours. So I figured I'd have, at least 5 days, maybe a week, to come up here and back. But no, it turned out to be 3 days, but I tried it anyway. So there you are.
Pretty adventuresome. That's a long ways for a 3-speed bicycle. I ride bicycles. Yeah.
Well, it was ridiculous, you know. But anyway, when the folks back home in Minneapolis heard about my taking a ride with a traveling salesman on 395, my aunt said, Shirley never had sense enough to be afraid. And I'm afraid that that puts it. So there you are. I'm glad I did it.
So he was here before his family was running the something up here. How did that all get going?
Well, he grew up in Valley Center, and they'd come up for picnics, and you know, I suppose the boys hunted up here. And anyway, he and his brother, after he got out of the Army, World War II, he and his brother were, you know, studying the place there at the corner.
What was his brother's name?
Russell. And they, you know, kind of figured that could make a good place for a business, and they were looking for something. There was a big canyon between the road, the present road, and the business building, where the business building would be. And they had to have that filled in. And only knows what, you know. There was a lot of work that had to be done.
Was it a functioning business already?
Oh, nothing. Nothing. Bare land.
Oh, it was bare land.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So they thought the bare land at the summit was might be a good opportunity there. I see.
Mm-hmm. So, anyway, they started, let's see. I came up in the summer of 53, and he had been there about 7 years. Yeah. So that would put it at about 46, probably late 46, and maybe early 47. And he and his brothers and a friend or two built the buildings, you know, as they could. And then that, somewhere along the line, building the service station building, there was a blizzard going on, or a series of snowstorms, and they had an enormous tent over the area with a bonfire going in the middle, and that's how they put up the brick walls, the block walls of the service
station. Keep it warm enough.
Building, yeah.
That's clever.
Yeah. So, anyway, he and his brother ran the place for several years, and it started out with just a little, two small room building. One was kitchen and one was the area where we stood and waited on the customers outside, you know.
You mean like a snack bar?
Right, exactly.
Snack bar and gas station was how it started?
Yeah, mm-hmm. And there at the snack bar, they sold soft drinks and popcorn. And whether they started out right away with sandwiches, I don't really know. But, you know, the place kind of grew like Topsy.
Would this be like an early or a later picture of the snack bar?
Oh, well, that's how it was. Yeah. Yeah.
Not an early picture, though, right?
Oh, pretty early. Yeah. Yeah. As I say...
So that was this two-room building, the snack bar, and...
Yeah, it must have started out as the two rooms from the looks of the roof line and all. Yeah. And then outside tables, no inside tables at all.
This, you said he came up there in 46, late 46, early 47, and those cars look like are late 40s, maybe early 50s. That would probably predate you. Was he had souvenirs or postcards already when you showed up in 53?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So in this picture, I only see the gas station, I'm
the
thinking,
service
right?
Station is, I mean, the snack bar.
It's off frame?
It's here.
I see.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
That's what I couldn't understand is
I see.
What
uh-huh.
I was, to and the left, I see.
Right.
I see.
Uh-huh.
So there wasn't, right now there's the restaurant here and that wasn't there.
That wasn't there.
You had the
there.
Snack bar over here.
Yeah.
Which we see there. And
yeah.
The service station.
The service station here would have been, you know, like here.
And I'm not even sure I see gas pumps here, but they must have been.
Oh, they. I'm sure they were.
Yeah, I mean, this looks edited or something. That one's kind of rare. I haven't seen that. I've only seen that one go by once on eBay, and I snagged it.
The gas pumps are hiding, I think,
behind
the car.
Oh, behind the car.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think you're right. Oh, yeah, because the car would be filling up, of course.
Yeah.
And then this is later 50s when you were there.
Definitely. Yeah. I remember when that was taken, the trees were cut down. Let's see, Denny was born. The trees were cut down probably in late 58. They died because of all the paving around, you know.
And that corresponds to the vintage of the cars. I mean, I looked.
Oh, good.
And there in the picture, you can see that you guys have expanded more and you've got where the restaurant is now.
Yes, yes. Then They were building that building. By the time we were married and I moved up there, that would be, early 54.
And that was intended to be a sit-down restaurant?
At the north end toward the gas station. And then, at the time, the new building to the right, over here, to the south, I think, was mostly storerooms. Going to eventually put the grocery store in, but, you know, it kind of depended on how money was available and all.
So did this kind of replace the snack bar? Is that what you're saying?
Oh, no, that's the gas station building.
Oh, I'm sorry. No, and this the restaurant building where Mother's Kitchen is, did that replace the snack bar, or was this still...
The snack bar is buried here, kind of in the middle of the
front.
Oh,
I see, because you used the kitchen facility within the...
Yeah.
Of course, right.
Yeah.
You wouldn't build another kitchen. Right?
So it was...
So kind of build around it.
In the middle,
I get it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I like this one. I really find charming. you remember these postcards well. And then I look in the picture here and I see that they're selling pennants,
mm-hmm.
felt pennants that said Palomar Mountain. They're selling observatory postcards, it looks like, and postcards in a rack, and
mm-hmm.
you have a sign saying souvenirs here, and and things down below for display, and I see it says Frasher's photos, and I've seen a lot of them are Frasher's photos. Would these all be postcards that you and your husband commissioned to sell as souvenirs? Is that how this stuff comes about?
Now,
I don't know how it works.
Before my time, I really don't know. I was there probably, it would have been later than this. We ordered a lot made, Frasier's is the way our salesman pronounced it.
Oh, Frasier.
We ordered a lot of things from them. And Wayne got permission to take the photographers up to the observatory and get some inside shots.
Yeah, I've seen those.
You've seen those?
Yeah. I don't collect them myself, but I've seen them.
Let's see now. My kids would have been in the later grades. Our school went up to the eighth grade. They were sixth or seventh grade. In through there, maybe a little bit earlier, when Wayne had all those postcards made, and of course they were in color, so the black and whites, I just don't know.
I've seen the color ones a lot. Yeah, I know the ones you're talking about.
Yeah, yeah. All that was done when I was around were in color.
Well, as you know, there's a lot of postcard collectors, so these things are going around on eBay to this day.
Are you roasting?
Roasting? I'm warm.
You are.
But I'm okay.
Well, tell you what. If you're okay, I'll this door open.
Yeah. Oh, I'm not too hot, if that's what you mean. You remember this? This fold-out?
That's what we had made at that same time.
Yeah.
Yeah, and these would have some of the interior shots. Yeah. And he had... Yeah. That's
Old drawing, right.
Oh, and none of the, oh, the inside of the, there were two Schmidt Camrys. It was a 48, and I forget whether that was the bigger one or not, but anyway, we had cameras of that. Huh, I'd forgotten about this.
Yes, I knew you'd get a kick out of seeing these things.
Gosh, yes.
They're a blast from the past.
Oh, and then telling about it. Yeah, now see, a lot of these details, a light year, you know, defined, some of the dimensions of the telescope and whatnot, were on this disc, about yay big, mm-hmm. that I was telling you about on the phone.
Yeah.
And Wayne had those made, too.
Did he do the salt and pepper shakers? I mean, did he do a whole range of souvenirs with whoever makes those?
See the little copper dome?
That's the one I've seen on eBay.
Yeah. Did the salt and peppers look about like them?
No, they were smaller, but yeah, they looked about like that. Uh-huh. This one I've seen. So he did this one?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
if there are
cool.
spider webs, please forgive. They grow too damn fast.
So he did the copper dome. Right.
Yeah.
Paperweight or whatever it is.
And there were ashtrays and a thermometer and heaven only knows what.
Yeah, every variation and flavor, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, everybody, all the kids had to have something for their visit.
Yes.
You must have done a steady business.
Believe
souvenirs.
Me,
That's been lucrative.
Oh, and in the snack bar picture.
Yeah, that's right.
Did you see the window down underneath?
Underneath the counter there.
Yeah, that's
that was
where
loaded
the souvenirs,
So there's a lot of selection.
Mm-hmm.
I assume you sold usual snack bar fare. Obviously, you had Arden ice cream, but you sold hamburgers and hot dogs and
hamburgers and hot dogs, coffee.
Uh huh.
Really, precious little, you know.
Right, just basic.
A very, very limited menu. And when I came up, there were a lot of snow bunnies coming up in the winter, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And all they served was coffee along the hot drink line. And down at the PX's, we had individual envelopes of Carnation hot chocolate. And you just pour it in a cup, add hot water, and, you know. And I figured, gee, the kids need something hot to drink. So I talked them into starting to carry those. And, of course, you know, we'd sell cases
of
it. So that's one thing I did.
You introduced hot chocolate to Summit Grove. I'm
going to
make sure that gets in this.
Oh, boy.
Your mother, see?
Yeah.
You know, the guys, you know, sometimes they don't figure it out.
Well.
Seriously.
Exactly. As far as I'm concerned, women's thinking has been long overlooked, you know.
Yeah.
We've come a long way, baby, but not long
enough.
Yeah.
So, what else is particularly interesting? So these old linen postcards, with like I showed you this one of that, and here's another one. They would have predated your arrival. They weren't around anymore.
They might have been around.
Yeah.
You know, in fact, I might have bought some to send to people to prove that I got here. By darn. But I don't, I didn't pay that much attention.
And cards like that, one that look a little too really vintage, that would predate what you were selling? Someone else was doing that? Or do you have any theories?
Well, now, it's possible we still sold that, when I moved up. I don't know. But they definitely predated that special order.
But that you could have sold ones that had older pictures like this.
We could have.
Yeah.
Do any of them mention how much postage?
Yes. There's 4 cents.
Oh.
Which is later.
Well, yeah. Now that's definitely later. They were 3 cents.
Yeah.
When I came up, probably.
Here's Here's an old one. 1 cent, Doan's Huts. Oh, that predates.
That's old.
An oldie.
A penny postcard.
That would be Bailey's selling that, probably.
Nellie. Nellie, no, that predated Bailey's.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's right.
I wonder if it was still Nellie's when Bailey's got the post office. I don't know. That was before my time.
This is 1912.
As someone put it, that was BS. That was before Shirley.
So, did you guys sell these? Or what can you tell me about Georgia Damski?
Tell them our garden cafe.
That's Oak Knoll Campground at the bottom of S6, where Georgia Damski with the UFOs and his telescope.
Oh,
you must know something about that.
Actually, I don't think I ever got back in there to see the building.
You never went and heard his talks or anything?
No. I don't think I ever met the man. I saw him on TV once. He was on TV. I hadn't been there very long.
Right.
Wayne and I were watching. Wog came in and kind of stood there in the doorway, you know, watching. And somewhere along the line, the interviewer asked Adamski, now how do we know that, you know, all this is true, all this you're telling us about the spaceships is true, and that you're not making it all up? And Adamski, as much as said, you know, may I be struck by lightning if I'm not telling the truth? And of course, Wayne and Wog just stood there waiting for the picture to disappear because the studio had been hit by lightning. So Adamski was not to be believed.
Yeah, you showed up right around the time he published that book, Flying Saucers Have Landed, so he was already starting his celebrity when he showed up.
Oh, definitely. And
looking at some old newspaper clippings, people were driving out here to hear talks by him.
They had a convention where a lot of people stayed here at the lodge. And then the whole bunch of them went out where they could see down off the mountain to the east. East? Yeah, okay. Overlooking, the Warner Springs area. You know, Lake Henshaw and toward Warner Springs and all that. And here they were, 5,000 feet and, you know, maybe a little more. Looking out, and like Wog Bergman said, he was there. You could see cars on the road there to the south of Warner Springs. The twin headlights, I mean, it was obviously cars. But Adamski pointed them out as spaceships. And someone said, now, what altitude would you say they were flying at, Professor Adamski? And Professor Adamski said, probably at least 7,000 feet. Well, here they were at 5,000 feet looking down, you know. So that's the kind of expert knowledge.
Yeah, he was enjoying the public attention, right?
Exactly. And I read his first book, and I forget now. These surgeries have affected my brain. It couldn't be my age.
No, because it's not your age, because I have that problem too, and I'm over 54.
I forget now, but there were statements, scientifically, you know, scientific-wise, that I knew were wrong. I worked in chemistry, then I worked in physical therapy. I had enough physics and chemistry in my background to know a little bit, you know, of what was going on. And I knew that some of his statements were absolutely wrong.
No one thought much of him up here on the mountain?
No. Down there, behind his place, there were a lot of little cabins.
Right, he had a group, a following.
Well,
allegedly.
And he had a lot of girls working there. Waitresses, probably. There was his wife, and his wife had a, you know, social secretary, whatever. And as I say, all these girls. And of course, everyone assumed that the girls had their cabins out back and were, you know, working girls. Well, Hap Mendenhall and George Mendenhall, who lived at the foot of the hill.
At Kuka there at the Charo Ranch?
Yeah. They were out rounding up George's cattle. I forget who all, but, you know, a bunch of the Mendenhall men, a few of them at least. And they had been rounding up the cattle and stopped in at Adamski's for lunch. And, of course, all these girls standing around. And I think it was Hap Mendenhall said something to the effect of, "George, you remind me of George's stud bull professor out there in the meadow, surrounded by all these women." That's how Adamski took the name Professor, after a stud bull. So, you know, once I heard that, I absolutely lost any respect I might have had for him, you know. Oh, and then they tell of, before he moved up here, he was in Valley Center.
Right, that's correct.
Where Wayne's folks still lived, or relatives at least. Anyway, he had a PA system going, and I don't know just what he was advertising or touting, but he had that cursed PA system going way too long, way too loud, you know. He was just I can't think of a low enough term.
Before that, he was in Laguna Beach, where he ran a little group called the Royal Order of Tibet.
Really?
And he published a little booklet that was full of sort of Eastern mysticism, you know, because that was real popular, remember, Theosophy,
yeah.
And, you know, down in La Jolla, Point Loma,
uh-huh.
You know, Annie Besant.
And there was that yoga thing up in the Laguna Beach area, maybe.
This would have been before Valley Center, so he was in Laguna Beach, so I don't really know about Laguna Beach history, but I know he was there, and I've got the reprint of his booklet that was published at that time. And then from there, he moved to Valley Center, and then to the Oak Knoll campground. Uh-huh. But he had a following, you know, that's how he must have made money, by people sort of doing various jobs and pooling their money, I assume.
I suppose.
So he was sort of like a spiritual advisor or something, I assume. When you read the booklet, there's nothing wrong with what he's saying. You know, it's not like there's anything crazy or anything. It's common sense stuff. But he obviously could put it across that people that needed that, you know, it fulfilled something for them.
Well,
you know, what the heck?
maybe it did somebody some good, but
yeah, it didn't hurt anybody.
You just can't help but think he was a scam artist.
Yeah,
from the word go.
But anyway, he never came up to the top to your facility. You never met him.
Well, if he did, I never met him.
Never met him.
Oh, and then one other thing. Now, what was it? Oh, Wayne and I both read a lot of science fiction before we met, you know. And we still did some. And Wayne had kind of a half-baked theory. It was just kind of off the top of his head.
Mm-hmm.
And not that he believed it, but it might have been. What if the moon isn't through? What if it's with the, you know, the outside of the cup facing us, and back here is where the Martians came from, you know. And after all, the moon, I can't think of the word, but there is a little bit of variation there, but we still wouldn't be able to see.
Right, we don't see the backside, right.
Yeah, so Wayne would often stop in Adamski's on the way home from a trip to town and getting supplies, and he advanced this theory to Adamski one time over his cup of coffee. Just, you know, talking.
Right.
And Chuck Kearns was a night assistant at the observatory. He came in the snack bar a few days later. And, of course, he had, you know, he had heard this theory of wings. It was one of those things. And he came in and told Wayne that Adamski was telling the tourists about this great new theory of his.
Oh, he liked it.
So, you know, he took over this completely. Uh-huh. And after all, that was Wayne's 10 seconds of almost fame. So we got quite a kick out of that.
Well, there's still people keeping the flame alive. On the web, there's a website about George Adamski and some sort of foundation. People have, obviously, his personal files or pictures.
I'll be darned.
But it's a respectful...
As a former electronics tech, that's almost heresy, but I'm stuck with it. I don't want to bother with electronics.
So anyway, I just asked about him in case you rub elbows with him.
No.
He's not like a particular interest or anything. Because I know who to... I can contact those people with that foundation and get more information than I'd want to know. And
probably.
I'm more interested in the top of the mountain than the bottom of the mountain, anyway. So, did you run the snack bar and gas station year-round?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it ran year-round? So you could never take vacations?
724. Darn seldom.
Yeah, that's what I would think.
And, well, as I say, Wog was our partner there for a while.
When did that... Okay, I didn't catch that early. He was a business partner?
Oh, yeah. He owned half of TSG I came up.
From the beginning?
No. First of all, it was Wayne's brother, Russ. And I think Russ was a foreman at a ranch in Valley Center when they very first started. And through the building and whatnot, he kept his job down there. And somewhere along the line, he quit that. And he and his wife moved up here to the house there on the corner. And he and his wife, Noreen, and Wayne ran it. And then her asthma, lifelong asthma, bothered her too much, and they had to sell out. So Wog became their partner.
Oh.
And that was sometime before I came up.
But before 53.
Yeah. And then Wog was there. Let's see.
Was he working there or was he a silent partner?
Oh, he was working there part of the time. He was still running his cattle ranch.
Uh-huh.
But there for a while, we would alternate weekends. He'd run it, you know, every other weekend, and then we could get away if we wanted to.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least, you know, have a day off.
Yeah.
We often took the kids out on picnics, well, even for supper if we'd been working, but we could take them darn few places because of the time involved.
Because you had to get back. And everything was a drive, right?
Yeah.
A slower drive than nowadays, too.
Oh, definitely. And I can remember going down the South Grade, up the East Grade, to the County Park here.
Right on Crestline, you mean?
Yeah, not far from here, for a picnic.
Oh, just to give them a drive to get...
Well, the kids,
they thought they
the
were getting
didn't,
away.
The kids didn't know where we were going, you know.
Surely.
And to them, it was a big wow.
It was a big outing. We got away.
Yes. So there you go.
What are your children's name?
Jean. And let's see now. She was born in 55.
J-E-A-N.
Right, yeah. And Mark was born in 56. They're almost a year apart.
I'm not sure I should put that in. It's a great story. Actually, that one's going in. That is freaking hilarious.
Oh, dear. Well, and then, of course, once in a while, we'd go over to the state park. They knew that road.
Yeah, know? Right.
So we couldn't get away with everything
right.
there.
Right.
But, you know, it was a big deal to get away even that much.
Yeah.
And even in the evening, people would come by. And I can remember more than once, they'd either get Wayne away from the supper table or just break up his evening, you know.
Right, yeah.
Wayne, I'd like a couple gallons of gas. I'm going to town tomorrow, but I'm going to town tomorrow and we'll fill up there. So I'd like just a gallon or two of gas.
Oh, my, that's irritating.
Because we were a penny or two more expensive.
Oh, that hurt.
Yes. and I
they'd actually say that.
Yes.
Oh, my.
And I can remember feeding the kids, having one of the kids in the high chair, you know, and maybe the other one sitting elsewhere, feeding them breakfast and in the morning, and they'd come by, Shirley, I need a gallon or two of gas to get to town, you know, and et cetera. And there I had to get the child out of the high chair, maybe into a coat, take them down to the snack bar with me because they were just big enough that I couldn't leave them at the house just to sell a gallon or two of gas. So.
Well, that what doesn't kill you makes you stronger, right? Is that what they say?
It's a good thing I started out with low blood pressure.
Yeah, that one would be too much. Especially like if it's happening when your kid's screaming and you're putting up with a big situation and then it's like 1 gallon of gas.
Yeah.
Boom!
Yes.
Yeah, I think I would. That would be very understandable if you felt angry.
And they're neighbors. You know.
You
gotta live on the same mountaintop.
Right,
with them.
Yeah.
You can't say
right.
anything or
no,
even show
not.
Anything.
No, of course not.
So there you go.
Now you can laugh about it.
Oh, exactly. Yeah. It's one of those things.
No, that's people. I mean, that's life.
Yeah.
I mean, everybody, I mean, that's why things are the way they are now with the small businesses in decline and Walmarts.
Yeah.
And all these big stores taken over, so it's just that progression.
And I can't argue too
cheapest
much.
Price.
I do my shopping at Walmart because it's a one-stop deal.
Yeah.
You know, going to mom and pop, we'd have to make half a dozen stops.
So did you? So you said it started out with a snack bar and gas station, and then when in this picture here where the building was kind of built around the snack bar, and then eventually you started a store here.
Let's see now. That building was started building in very late 53, probably late 53. I moved up in the spring of 54. Actually, in January of 54, Wayne got a job at Borrego State Park. And anything they could do like this to bring in extra money, you know, was to the good.
Oh, it wasn't enough
no.
to run this.
No. Had to have, or it was nice to have extra money to, well, to finish a building or whatever,
right.
you know. So Wayne's brother Glenn was up here most of the time. Wayne was, for a while they were burying rocks out in Borrego State Park. There were a lot of rocks near the entrance, and somebody decided that didn't look good. It wasn't good PR, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So they were burying these enormous, and I mean enormous rocks, you know. Can you imagine? But he got paid. So Wayne and I moved down, we lived in the park for a while. We lived there a few months, say from January something to about May.
Who ran the store? The restaurant?
His brother Glenn.
Glenn ran it.
Came up from Escondido. He had an orange grove and whatnot. So he could be gone, you know, a fair amount of the time. And sometimes we'd come up on the weekends to help. Anyway, where was I? Anyway, they were building the building in through there. And probably that extra money that Wayne brought up helped finish the building. And, oh, then it was quite a while. We had a shelf or two of groceries in the snack bar. And it was quite a while before we could actually build a grocery store at that end. A few years at least, I forget. But that eventually went in. And then a real estate office was way at this end in the picture. Way at this end toward the State Park Road.
Who did that?
Well, a couple called Randall. R-A-N-D-A-L-L. Her name was Donna. I can't think of his name. And they were there at least a few years.
So the snack bar was expanded just because you felt you needed a sit-down area? Is that, I'm not sure I understand.
An inside eating area.
Inside eating area. Okay,
yeah.
Now I get it.
See, it was outside tables.
All night.
Which was fine for, you know, part of the year.
But it would be brutal,
all,
right.
In the winter, with the snow bunny crowds, you know, it was really called for.
And the buildings that I see there now, those are the very buildings, or they've been replaced or something?
Same buildings.
Wow.
Yeah.
You built them well. Or somebody's
Well, concrete block, you know.
Yeah.
They've changed the inside.
Oh, sure.
Of that snack bar building, the mother's kitchen building.
Mm-hmm.
They've changed the inside to the point where I can't even say, the post office was here or whatever.
Oh, that's right, the post office. You guys ran the post office for a while.
Wayne was postmaster. Let's see now.
I think it's mentioned in Marion Beckler's book. I'd have to dig it out.
Could be. He became postmaster late in 57. And don't print this.
Okay.
for a while, we had the post office down at the end building where the real estate office later came in. And a sign on the door, if you want to buy stamps, come down to the snack bar.
Oh, ouch. Yeah.
And mail came up three times a week, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. And we'd go down to that room for a couple hours on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, but otherwise no one was there. And of course we didn't realize this was wrong. It was just the way the business called for it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then I guess we got the word. Maybe Mrs. Bailey told us. She had been postmaster.
Right, Adeline Bailey?
Adeline, yeah. Brad. Brad's grandmother.
Mm-hmm.
Her son was Steve. Anyway, somewhere along the line, soon after he became postmaster, he put the post office in that little building or little room right next to the snack bar. So if anyone came in the post office, we had to run around and wait on them. That's all. So that was more legal.
And then when did you discontinue being the post office?
Wayne retired in probably late 70, and I took
late over. Late 1970?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And I took over as, what, officer in charge or something. And then...
You mean as the postmaster?
I wasn't postmaster? Actually postmaster, just officer in charge,
uh-huh.
You know, which implied it was temporary.
Uh-huh.
And then in early 71, my aunt was going to come up to visit, and she was my good housekeeping aunt. So I had to get a couple of weeks off to shovel off the house before she came up.
Mm-hmm.
So I told the powers that be down to San Diego office just this. So they brought up a young fellow to take over from me, and he eventually became postmaster.
So in early 71, someone else took over.
Yeah. And then we were right in through there. We became silent partners. And and in the meantime, Wog and his wife Florence had been divorced, but this was several years back. I don't know just when. Maybe around 60-ish. They got divorced. Florence got their half of the snack bar as a form of alimony and to help help raise Dutchie, their son, Kurt. So we were paying Florence rent, you might say, until Ralph came in, and we had bought Florence out recently.
Oh, you bought out Florence.
Yeah, and then not long after we bought her out, Ralph and Bev Culp came in as partners.
Hold on a sec.
Okay.
I'm trying to get this in case that tape gets destroyed. So Florence, the ex-wife, got half share in a divorce settlement that you bought out. Florence, and then who did you sell to?
Ralph and Bev Culp, K-U-L-K.
K-U-L-K. When was that? That you
I think early 71.
Got it.
And then he brought in Dan and Marcia Beischlein. Have you run into that name before?
Oh, yeah. Back to the Roberts family up here.
That's right, yeah. And then Wayne became we became silent partners. And they ran the place.
But I thought you said you sold it. Why? What do you mean?
Well, we sold half.
Oh, you sold the Florence half.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So you sold the half share
to the Culps.
Share to them. Mm-hmm. And then you continued as silent partners for half.
Yeah. And Ralph was a realtor. And he was instrumental in finding the yogas who bought the place.
Nice. And then that's when you sold your half?
He sold his
half?
The entire thing.
So then the yoga center bought both halves.
Yeah.
Got it. Well, you know, these little things like this, these are actually, it's interesting, you know, to hear how things changed around.
Oh, well, and with my memory, I'm not necessarily putting them in chronological order, so I'm not that much help.
And what did you say about the Beischleins again? What was that?
Well, Ralph brought them in as half of his half, if you know what I mean. I assume they paid him something, and they were there helping run the place.
And which Beischleins? Which names?
Dan and Marcia.
Dan and Marcia. Half partner with Coke. Got it. Just want to make sure I mentioned the progression. But then, so then you pretty much stopped working there in
71. Yeah, fairly early in 71.
Yeah. did your time.
You know, that 7-day-a-week business.
Yeah.
I wouldn't wish on my worst enemy.
Yeah. So, back to the snack bar. You hired people to work there, I assume, right? Or was it totally you and Wayne, and you guys did the gas station and the cooking and sold the souvenirs?
Yeah, if a car drove up to the snack bar, you know, if you had hamburgers on the grill that were about to burn, yes, you had to make those up and serve them, you know, before you could get out there. But yeah, you took care of both places. Now, Wayne's brother, Glenn, was up there a lot.
To help out before he had his...
Well, let's see.
He got paid some sort of wage.
Maybe he was more weekends.
When it was busier.
Yeah, it would be busier on weekends. Well, and then, most afternoons, when weather permitted, and not on weekends, Wayne would go out wood cutting, and we had a little room near the back of the post office. I'd take the kids down there. They could have their nap there, and I'd be in the post office for mail time. It worked out, you know, kind of a late lunchtime, you might say.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the way we worked it for a while.
And everybody came by to check their mail. It was kind of a reason to do something.
Well, yes. Most everybody would come for their mail in through that time, you know, either mail to go out or see what had come in. But then later in the afternoon, Wayne might go out woodcutting and I'd be running the place.
For money, right? He was woodcutting for money or for his own wood?
Well, we used it at the house too.
Oh, for your own
And for the dining room fireplace.
Oh, of course.
That
right.
really swallowed it up.
Right.
Yeah. Somewhere along the line, I guess while the kids were real small, maybe Glenn was up there a lot, so I wouldn't have to, you know, bundle up the kids and take them down there all afternoon. I don't think I'd have done that. But for mail time, yes, that short period of time. And then, of course, once the kids got in school, I was down there at least all afternoon, so Wayne could get out and do things, whatever.
And the children went through the whole Palomar school from beginning to end, through eighth grade? Or?
Gene did, but Mark never had anyone in his grade. So, when Gene started over at Julian High, we got permission from them, and it wasn't easy, to send Mark over there too.
Since she was gone, right?
Yeah, just so he could have that, you know, that experience
right.
of being in a class with other kids before he hit high school. Our regular high school was Fallbrook.
Fallbrook?
Yeah.
Whoa.
A lot of the people up here sent their kids to Escondido because it was simpler. Sometimes they'd have relatives that
right.
the kids could stay with, you know, whatever. But no, I'm pretty sure our regular school was Fallbrook, and that was ridiculous to us. But we had a neighbor up here on the road department who was working out toward Borrego, maybe. Anyway, he would drive down the East Grade every morning, and he offered to take the kids down to the bus at Lake Henshaw.
To catch to Julian?
Yeah.
Oh, that worked out well.
Beautifully, yeah.
And then how did they get home?
Well, then Wayne would drive down to Lake Henshaw in the afternoon and pick him up.
Wow.
Yeah. And then as soon as my daughter gets 16, I think it was on her birthday evening, that we were down picking up a yellow Volkswagen Bug, and she drove then.
Yeah.
And she just sold that thing within the last 5 years, and she had put over 400,000 miles
wow.
on it.
Wow.
I don't know how many motors had been in it, but still going. So.
Wow. It's much more logistical issues I can see. I mean, we just take our son a short distance. Our son's 14 now, but he's just started La Jolla High School. And it's a relatively short distance compared to what you had to grapple with.
It's unbelievable. And you just take it for granted.
Yeah.
Well, look at me. I grew up in Minneapolis. You know, this was totally different.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about culture shock for a city girl, you know. And I didn't drive. Minnesota didn't have driver's ed or anything. My mom couldn't have afforded a car if she had known how to drive, you know. It was trolleys. So everything was different.
Mm.
Oh, and no phone.
No telephone?
No. When I first came up here, you know, asking phone about Wayne about the phone or the motel, I also asked about the phone, expecting, right around the end of the building, you know. No, 5 miles away at the State Park, or 5 miles the other way at the observatory.
Oh, only the places that had money to get running lines had them, huh?
No, radio.
Oh, radio, no phone lines.
From both places. Yeah.
Oh.
No. So, electricity didn't come to the mountain until, I think, the summer before I came up, the summer of 52. And then it came up the east side of the mountain, more or less up to Nigger Nate Grade.
Right. The west side, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
West side. Take a Dutchman of what she means, not what she says. Yeah, so phones. Oh, my aunt back in Minneapolis would write occasionally. And now that you're going to have a baby, so this was early 55, maybe late 54, now that you're going to have a baby, I think you should have a phone, don't you? Wayne had applied for the phone in, I think in 46. Yeah, in 46. It was put in, the line came up the mountain in late 56, no, late 56 and early 57, because they wanted to clear that long-standing application from their books.
His?
Yeah. Yeah, that's when the phones came to the mountain.
Well, that sure would change things up here, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah.
In terms of communication, the mail became less. People. Oh, I certainly remember. I mean, I was born in 52, but I remember. My mother still writes a lot of letters, but it's really a dying thing, as you know.
Right. The phone is so handy.
Yeah.
But you know, for instance, all my life growing up, including when I was in the Navy and occasionally made a long-distance call to my mom, you know, you knew long-distance was expensive, and you couldn't possibly think of anything important enough to say at those rates.
Right, yeah.
So that a long-distance call was a little bit ridiculous, because neither of you could think of anything important enough to discuss.
Right, because you just wanted to chat, right?
Yeah. So that was a little ridiculous. And up here, we could not call a doctor, for instance. You know, we could make a doctor's or a dentist's appointment. That was a big thing when you had kids, especially.
Oh, right.
Yeah. So.
So you had to, for any sort of doctor, you had to drive down to
Escondido. There was a doctor in Valley Center, and I think it was him who was written up in the newspaper in my early years about how he'd come riding his horse up the side of the mountain to make a house call, you know.
Huh.
Now, whether he was that doctor in Valley Center or lived closer, I don't know.
Huh.
but this was a big wow.
So what would be your busiest times of the year, or what would be when you really felt like you saw a lot of people?
Oh, definitely a snowy weekend would be the busiest.
Just like now, huh?
Well, yeah. And of course there would be the occasional motorcycle, but nothing like now. And of course summers were generally busier than the rest of the year. So school vacation times.
No motorcycle gangs came through back then, you know, in the 50s, early 60s, somewhere?
Not that early, no. But for a while, we had a motorcycle club based in Riverside or San Bernardino that wanted to come up here, like, for a long weekend camp, you know. And they ordinarily met at some beer joint down home, and for instance, they had a melodrama, for instance, put on at our place, in the eating area, you know, behind the snack bar. Well, that was still there, and there was a hillside between that and the State Park Road, a little bit of a hill. That little bit of a hill would be the stage.
Right.
Whether they actually built a stage, they must have. Whatever. And Mark was 12 to 14, and then we had another young kid from the mountain, almost that age, as busboys and maybe running the gas station, you know. And one time, the Quaff Club, I think they called it, they came charging up on their motorcycles, probably, oh, I don't know, 50 or 100 of them.
You mean Quaff like C-O-I-F, like Quaff here?
No, Q-U-A-F, as in drink.
Oh, great.
Yeah. They came reformed into, you know, maybe six abreast or whatever, and came pouring up into the snack bar area. And I can remember Mark and that other kid just standing there open-mouthed looking at all these gorgeous motorcycles. As I've said before, I have never seen such naked lust.
right. Young boys, motorcycles, right.
Yes. So that happened, I don't know, maybe three or four times over the space of a couple of years. That was when Ralph was in the business, Ralph Culp. He kind of lined these things up. Oh, and one time they put on the Charlie Brown play.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
I don't know who had what connections, but, you know, these weren't necessarily members of the club who put these things on, but they were at least friends of somebody in the club.
Well, it certainly doesn't sound like a Hell's Angels kind of motorcycle club group.
No.
Yeah.
No. But one weekend, it wasn't a Quaff Club weekend, but it was a long holiday weekend, and we had campers out in back of our place, you know, up among the trees, because all the other campsites were full. So Wayne would let campers in our place, and he found out that there was a few Hell's Angels, and they were standing there right at the entrance, the driveway between the dining room building and the gas station, where you would drive up into the campgrounds, you know, our yard at the house and whatnot. This enormous old dude kind of cleaning his nails with a bayonet,
sure,
you know, that
sure
kind of thing.
Right.
And they all looked rougher than
right
could be.
I remember.
And they were scaring away
sure
the family-type campers. So somebody came in and told us about this. And Wayne went out, and, you know, when he saw this. Wayne was not a big, aggressive individual. He was tall and thin and nice as could be, you know. And He really didn't want to.
Didn't want to deal with that one, did he?
But he went up and told him, you know, hey, do you guys know you're scaring away the people who would ordinarily camp here, you know? And I guess putting it that way, he flattered their ego enough so that they didn't get aggressive or anything. And they did move. And
so did you regularly host campers?
Only on long weekends when all the other campgrounds were full.
Oh, I see.
See, there was the state park and the county, and that was it.
The county campground, you mean down at the bottom below the observatory campground? Or do you mean they camped right here in Crestline?
Not
Crestline campground. At the top of the hill.
That's right. There was that. I forgot about that.
They did camp there because there's a road and picnic tables.
Yes, yes, and there are two road on either side.
They did camp there?
Oh, yeah, yeah. And when that and the state park and the county campgrounds up here on the hill, not far from here.
Do you mean the ones on the way to the observatory? The Fry Creek and the observatory campground at the bottom of the valley
Fry
there?
Fry Creek might have been there, but
I'm not sure which.
Okay, as you go to the observatory, I think you come to the observatory campgrounds first. That's on the right. That wasn't there.
Oh.
Then you go a little further, and the Fry Creek is on the left.
Right, that's correct.
That's where that tree is.
Oh, yeah.
It's been broken down, heaven only knows how many times, you know, and the road is paved now. But that's the entrance of Fry Creek campgrounds. That was there, but apparently a primitive campgrounds.
Uh-huh.
I don't know that there were even tables or anything.
But where was the county campground? That's what I was trying to get at.
You drive down here, and I can't tell you where, but...
By here, so you mean Crestline?
Yeah, yeah. And maybe halfway between here and the fire department buildings?
Yeah, that picnic area.
Then up
now.
On your right
yeah.
is the what used to be the county campground.
No, it's now just a county picnic ground.
Oh, okay.
So that was a campground. Oh,
that was that a campground.
Was it.
Yeah,
oh.
Not a big one.
No, but
there
they
was
stopped.
Only a part-time ranger, you know.
Oh. I didn't know they camped there.
But yeah, at one time.
Huh. Mm-hmm. So when that one was full and the state park was full, then you did your thing.
Yeah, and the little federal jobby there, just the other side of the fire department that you mentioned.
Oh, that was the group camp.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. That one was open too.
Now back then, it wasn't even a group camp, I don't think.
It was just a regular campground.
Yeah, the families could come in. So when they were all full, rather than sending them down off the hill, we would let them come into our place.
So you had this, when the state park, the federal campground, which is now the group camp. And the county,
and Fry Creek,
now
federal.
Oh, Fry Creek was around that.
Yeah.
Wow. Yes. Is this this later kind of history? I don't know much about it. I've been reading too much of the old history.
Oh, yeah. Now let's see. Well, that was in through. Well, a good many years we. We had campers, for the three long weekends each summer.
Why didn't you want to have a campground? Because there was just no need?
See, all we had was the heads at the station.
Oh, right.
There's a limit.
Didn't have the facility.
You know.
Right.
So we fit in, maybe a dozen families on our place. Everybody got by, And they were glad to have some place and not have to head back to town, that's all.
So
very informal.
How did people deal, obviously your gas station, so people had car problems and things like that. How did that
occasionally
all get reconciled with breakdowns? Was there a mechanic up here? Did people just, a tow truck came and towed cars away? Or
Wayne was a pretty fair country mechanic.
Uh-huh.
So was his brother Glenn. I don't know about Wog. I would assume he was, when he was working here.
They could help people get going again.
With small problems.
Yeah.
Wayne sold a certain amount of fan belts and oil
I see.
You know. And then, oh dear, we had a school teacher up here who we kind of wondered about. She asked one of the men who worked here, he was a night assistant at the observatory and worked at the snack bar on his weekends off. And the school teacher came by. She knew she needed antifreeze, so he broke out the confuser. You know, for so many gallons of water in the radiator, you needed so much antifreeze. And she said, well, in that case, put in only half that much, because I'm only here half the time. So, and she was our school teacher. So that was the talk of the month.
She was not a good math teacher, obviously.
No. But I suppose if you're a gambler at heart, you could gamble on
right.
being here in the warmer half.
So your children, when they went to the Palomar school, they were picked up by the teacher, or did you take them
over?
Oh,
no. It would have been our job to get them there. Usually, whoever was at the state park had kids.
So
at the time, there were
three
ranger houses at the state park. So at least one of them would have school children, you know. And we got so much per month or per school year, whatever, for school bus fee, you might say. Well, we would simply turn that over to whoever drove our kids just to and from school.
So Marion Beckler was their teacher for a while, right? She was teaching in the later...
She retired before our kids started school. I don't know just when she did retire.
56 or something. So yeah, they're too young.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
They were
And then I don't know who came along right then, but anyway, I think probably our kid's first teacher was that one who wanted only half the antifreeze, and I've lost track. Oh, when our kids first started, Andy Wheeler was the school teacher. He had been down at Palma Valley, and we were part of the Palma Valley school.
Right.
And he was here maybe 2 years, and then Dota Claudius Brown came up, and he painted the golden oak, as we
call it. Dota,
D-O-T-A? Right. Wow. Claudius Brown. And he painted the golden oak.
Wow.
And we bought that thing for $35.
That's a good painter. I've kind of ran through my basic questions I have. I'm trying to think of those. Well, I know what.
And
I
heaven knows I've digressed enough.
Yeah, those have been fun. So that round, I don't know how good your eyes are.
Mm-hmm. That's the thing I have, the little round one right
that's
there.
That's it. Yeah. Yeah.
You'll see it at the community center.
Well, good.
I don't know where the other one went to. I didn't see it at that time.
I don't remember what all was there, you know. It's one of those things you take for granted.
Of course. I mean, you had a lot. Now, I've got it in that little building that's back there, you know.
Uh-huh.
It was back in there.
Yes, yes.
That little tiny shed building.
That was the generator building.
Oh, it was?
Yeah. We had a generator. Oh, for several years, it worked kind of off and on, but we had some power failures that were pretty astounding.
And that was a backup generator, or that was before?
They did use it before electricity came up.
Oh, before it came up.
Yes.
And that was a backup after that.
And then after that, it was backup.
Yeah.
The electric lines came up as I say, more or less up to nigger in eighth grade. And the electric company engineers later mentioned to us, I forget just who, that that was the worst place in the world, in the country, for a line to be. The moist sea air, you know, coastal air, as it climbed up the mountain and got colder, and with the winds, the ice would build up on those cables, you know, something fierce, and the least little bit of wind, they'd start swinging and clashing and shorting out and whatnot. Mm-hmm. So they finally came and beefed up that line, who knows, maybe in this, oh, I suppose, somewhere in the 60s. Yeah. And up until then, a three-day power failure was nothing unusual. Hmm. So we needed our backup generator, you know, because we couldn't sell gas without it, without electricity. We had Servel refrigerators, the butane, you know, propane.
Oh.
Both at the house and at the snack bar. And of course, gas for cooking. But anyway, it was very good to get the line more reliable.
Sturdy.
Yeah.
Were you, do you recall any like celebrities driving up or anything, filling up with gas or the snack bar, Hollywood?
Yeah. I can't remember their names. A big, tall, old, good-looking guy, and he was married to some famous actress for quite a while. He was, you know, pretty famous way back when. And then, not William Conrad. He was the first. Matt Dillon. Wasn't him. Marvin Miller. He was on radio when I was a kid and had a voice that just wouldn't quit. You could recognize that voice, you know, anywhere. And I was doing something in the snack bar with my back turned to the counter, and he came in and asked for something, and I knew it had to be Marvin Miller. And sure enough, it was. Oh, and then Peter Hansen. Do you remember the movie The Sullivans?
No, I probably might have seen it, but I don't remember.
Well, in World War II, there were five Sullivan boys, and I think they grew up somewhere in New England. Anyway, they all joined the Navy, and they were all stationed aboard one ship, and of course it was sunk. And then they passed the Sullivan Law that never again could all the siblings be either stationed on one ship or in one fighting unit.
No, I haven't heard of that.
Oh, well, anyway, quite famous. And Peter Hansen was on TV, and he was the youngest of the Sullivan boys. That was probably his most famous role.
Why do you say he's youngest of Peter Hansen? That was a stage name? His name was Sullivan?
Peter Hansen was his stage name. He played the youngest of the Sullivan boys in the movie. And there again, his voice was very, very distinctive. And that's about it for celebrities.
Well, there are probably more, but you were busy.
We're
pretty far afield here.
Well, yes. And let's face it, television, I certainly didn't watch much television, you know, in through those early years of TV. So there might have been actors and actresses that I might have known their voices from radio if they had a very distinctive voice, you know.
It's not like you could go to a movie theater up here and see actors and actresses, right?
Right, yeah.
You know, one of the really you're not probably going to know anything about this, but I wanted to toss it out there. There's this Jack Parsons, this guy that started, he was involved in rocket fuel development at Caltech and the Jet Propulsion Lab in the 30s, obviously before your time. I just wondered if you'd heard some connections. He was involved in occult things in a sort of a group house in Pasadena that included, they were satanic believers and things like that. Anyway, they, allegedly, from what I can gather looking at some stuff, they came up the Palomar Mountain. Did you ever hear about any satanic cults or anything up here like that? No. L. Ron Hubbard, the guy that founded Scientology, was also part of this group.
You
want to talk about what we were talking about, George Adamski, you can talk about L. Ron Hubbard. This was before he got the whole Scientology thing going.
As far as I'm concerned, he makes Adamski sound almost sane, almost normal, whatever.
Yeah, so I just wondered if you'd heard about any cults like that up here when you came up here.
No.
I think it had been earlier. And I don't even know if people were aware anyway. What's going on?
No, if anyone was, I never heard about it.
Well, you're fortunate.
We did have one man up here. You might not want to tape this. It's not about the snack bar.
Yeah, I'll turn it. I'll pat the observatory.
Safety conscious, yeah.
Oh, yeah, university. I mean, I work at UC San Diego. Universities are probably the most safety conscious compared to any business or anything.
Yeah.
Because they have big pockets to sue.
Mm-hmm.
I mean.
Mm-hmm. Lately, Mark has, his friend has been working there longer, but Lloyd is afraid of heights. So it fell to Mark, who just started working there full time, a very few months ago, to run this thing. It's an enormous thing that was brought up on a flatbed truck, and it could kind of walk itself off the flatbed truck if you knew how to do it. Well, the driver who brought it up did and showed Mark. And then you've got to raise something, an arm, with the control panel on it to about a 70-degree angle from the ground, and then you can raise... You can move it, I guess. And then you can raise the control platform up higher, and it winds up with a control platform where my baby boy sat in the painter, 225 feet.
Mm.
So they painted the dome up as far as they could, and then the rig went back. I think they had it for a month. The rig went back, and they were going to bring a 175-foot monster up here. Mm. And fortunately, my baby boy was on vacation when that came up. So I don't know what the deal is now, whether they got all the painting done while he was gone a week or two ago. I don't even want to know.
Something occurred to me that I didn't ask. So to supply the food for the snack bar and supplies for the gas station, that was all you and Wayne going down the hill to pick everything up?
Yes, except for the gas station, Union Oil.
They would bring fan belts or whatever you could order for them. Yeah.
Well, I should think so.
Or
no, I can't swear to that. We used to go out to Western Hardware, something like that in San Diego. Maybe Wayne picked them up there, but at any rate, they brought the gas and the oil.
Right. But you did all the food shopping.
Wayne would have things left at his folks. He had reefers and freezers down there.
He could buy in bulk, you mean, and supply from there?
Not necessarily in bulk, but the deliveries could be left there. And then he could come down the next day or possibly that evening or whatever.
He had deliveries to his parents in Escondido?
Uh-huh. And then he would pick them up from there. And then, for that matter, after Mother and Dad Thompson died, We had to go to a lot of wholesale houses in San Diego.
Yeah.
And there again, as the kids got a little older, I would go down with Wayne, and his brother must have been here at the time.
Wow, you kept busy.
It was very busy. Yeah.
That's a lot to keep together.
Yeah, yeah.
It was Union Oil the whole time, the gas station?
Yes. And then sometime when the Culks were in with us, the Culks and the Weichlines, how was it? The gas pumps had to be, what, modernized so there would be less smog, less gas fumes.
Right.
Coming, you know,
vapor
as you filled
control.
Your, that's it. And we certainly, I don't suppose we had the money to do that. Or at least didn't want to. So that's when we quit selling gas.
I see.
And then, did you know it became a law office, a law library?
I saw Tom Burton, right?
Yeah.
Did it?
Yeah. I got the biggest kick out of that.
I'm not sure what, I don't know much about that. It's kind of later. That was after the Yoga Center bought it, I assume?
Yeah, yeah. Yep.
Probably just establish business address, I guess. I don't really know.
It could be. I just don't know. But anyway, and Tom was living up here part-time, but I don't imagine he spent much time over there. And of course, now it's the Silk Factory.
Yeah. Which is nice.
Which I thought was pretty cute.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's very nice.
Yeah. And the post office... after the LA Olympics, Peter Uberoth, I think his name was,
right.
was in charge of them up
right.
in LA, and they had these little prefab post offices set up, you know, hither, thither, and yon in the area, and we got one of those.
Is that what it was, from the Olympic Village, you mean, or something?
Yeah, his idea for the Olympics was not to have it all in a big place. He spread it throughout the LA area to minimize the traffic and parking problems.
Right.
Well, little post offices were part of the scattering out, you know.
Olympic villages, right.
Yeah. So we got one, and Warner Springs got one. A little prefab PO.
I ball there the next time I'm going to do that.
Mm. Yeah. Certainly
very practical.
Well, and much better, much bigger than we had in our little 2x4 post office.
I think I'm running out.
Oh dear.
I just think about you working there all the time and I feel exhausted.
No.